Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. The authentic source of Nigerian information, giving you positive Nigerian energy, positive Nigerian vibes, positive Nigerian narrative. 6 p.m. in our studios here. And of course, it's on a Sunday when it's 6 p.m. You know what time is it? It's time for Real Talk with Lola. And of course, you know Lola is the South African-based Nigerian psychologist who comes to us every Sunday with some real issues. And of course, today she's here again with another interesting guest. And they'll be talking today about my truth. All right, Lola, are you ready with your truth too?
Yes, I am ready with my truth. Happy Sunday, and nice to hear your voice this week. Hi, B, are you there? Can you hear us, B?
I am here, and I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, yes. That's my guest. Her name is B Adewumi. She's based in England. Okay. She's proudly Nigerian too, based in England, and she's going to run us through our truths. And why have I said my truth for this episode is because what basically we're trying to show to people, it's what people are going through, what people are going through, have gone through emotionally, which I call emotional wounds, which never shows, but people are going through things and they've overcome things. And by sharing their stories on this particular month, they'll be able to put somebody who is in that situation and everybody can learn from them. IB, thank you so much for coming on, and thank you for willingly sharing your story with us on Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
All right, IB, you're welcome. Welcome to Spirit of Nigeria Radio. Also, to let you know that right away in Ibadan and the entire state, Live Radio 107.5 FM is taking you on live. And of course, that means how many continents you don't cross. All right, over to you, ladies. Take over the show.
Thank you.
Okay, so B, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? I mean, I know that you run a charity organization called Precious Sight, and I know that came about after your near darkness experience, which you're going to take us through. So before we go into in depth into all that, can you just tell us briefly about who you are? Okay. So that my listeners can know.
My name is B Adeomi. I live in the UK with my family. I would say we're just a regular family. We love God, and we have been blessed to be able to remain here because we were born here and we just live here, and just thank God for that, really.
Okay. Before we go right into your story, we are aware, I mean, the name of the radio station is Spirit of Nigeria Radio. And one of the things I try to do as a psychologist is bring about behavioral modification, basically trying to channel people's mindsets towards things, you know, try and shift our mindsets from what it used to be. And I know that a lot of Nigerians in diaspora have a lot of things they about, you know, being in diaspora, which is not the norm. And because of where we are, we tend to look at things from a different point of view. So you've lived in diaspora for quite a while. I'm very sure your thought process is quite different, you know, when you think about things that happen, and especially what happened to you, you know, in 2014, and it making you go towards what you're doing right now. So can you give us an insight into what really happened to you? Because I mean, I believe you were just a regular BE before 2014, not having any thought of what's going to change.
That's correct, Lola. Thank you for that. And, you know, I must say this, Lola, when I speak or I share my story, I always tell people it's not about me, but it's about what God has done through me. Mm. So if you ask me to tell you about myself, I'm sure you'd be thinking, what's wrong with me? She's not saying much about herself. But I've spoken to God, and I'm really not allowed to do it. I want God to be glorified through anything I do. And as you said, this is my truth, and my truth is a long story, but it's a story which I hope will encourage and bless others. So I'll start with what happened exactly. And as I said, I'm not going to go beyond my truth of, as I could say, my light affliction, and from then henceforth.
Yeah.
I remember waking up on the 2nd of July, 2013, and I realized that I couldn't see. I know you'd be thinking, what do you mean you realize you couldn't see? I went to bed the night before. I drove my family out. We went for dinner the night before. I came back. I went to bed. I woke up, and all I could see was clouds. Now, I will say to you, prior to that day, I only used one eye. So the eye that I use is the eye that I just could not see through. And you know, sometimes as women, we get a bit dramatic. We're like, oh my gosh, I can't see, I can't see. And my husband is looking at me, that what's wrong with this girl again? She has come with a wala, you know, sort of drama, just to, you know, frazzle me this morning. Does she want me to go to work, you know?
But yeah,
he soon realized that I wasn't playing. I wasn't playing. And my son at the time was 4 years old.
Wow.
And my baby was 4 years old. And it was something that, you know, my husband just had to swing into action that morning, because he soon realized, that I couldn't actually see. So he quickly writes, I'm not going to work anymore. I have to sort this situation out. So he whisked me off. And for those of you who know London, you don't want to be driving up into London during the week, early morning, because all you do is get caught up in traffic and this, that, and the other. So we got on the train. We found a way to get my son to nursery, got on the train. And that's really where my journey with God on this began. Because I remember being on that train. And you know, there's a saying, Lola, where it says, you know, that you feel lonely in the midst of so many people. So I felt alone.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, because I couldn't see. Now, a London a train platform of a morning time is very busy. So there's so many people hopping off and on the train. And all I could hear was the noise, people moving around me, flustering, stepping on my, you know, just all the busyness of the morning. And I was there, and I felt so lonely and alone and afraid. Because, I mean, it's not every day you wake up in the morning and you can't see. So there I was, and I know that I held closely to my husband, because I was like, do you know what? If anything happens to me here, I don't know where I am. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I just heard a voice from somewhere saying, do you want my seat? And I believe that that person, I can't even remember if it was a man or woman, could see that I was in some sort of distress. So I gladly said, yes, please. And I sat on that seat. And I remember, I think I had tears rolling down my eyes, because I'm like, God, what is this? What am I going to do? Is this how I'm going to live for the rest of my life? Is this how people go blind? I really don't know what to do. And I remember a still small voice saying to me, B, don't worry, you'll be okay. You know, and when I heard that, I had some peace. But then again, I did not know my journey was just beginning. So anyway, we got to the hospital, and it's the best hospital for eye care in the UK. It's Moorfields Eye Hospital, and it, you know, we got in there, and we went straight to accident and emergency, and into the nurses. And this is the first nurse that I saw. She looked in my eye, and I don't know what she was using, because I couldn't see her, but all I could hear her say was, oh, I see clouds. And that's all I could see from where I was sitting. So that even made me more apprehensive, because I'm thinking, I can see clouds, you can see clouds. This isn't good. I was hoping to get some sort of, oh, this is what is going on. I know what is going on in your eyes. Don't worry about it. But she sounded as frightened as I did. Anyway, suffice to say, little did I know that this woman was she was new at the hospital, and she didn't have the insight as to what was going on. So anyway, I was whisked in to see a doctor, and the doctor said, oh, your cornea has split. So my cornea split from one side of my eye to the other. So what had happened was that water fluid had seeped onto my eyeball. So all I could see, you know, when it's like you look in the sky and you can just see clouds. So that was the condensation kind of thing on my eye. So it was like, okay, at least now we have some sort of explanation as to what is going on. Anyway, that was that. So we saw the doctor. The doctor said, oh, this can happen. It happens quite rarely. And because I'm a black African woman, it's not quite common at all. So they were very keen about my situation. So anyway, we sat there and they said, okay, we'll give you some eye drops. Go away for a week or two. Come back and see how it goes. And, you know, I was so naive at that point in time. I felt that I'd go into, and 2 weeks' time, I'd be okay.
Yeah.
Off I went home, and I was using these eye drops. Suffice to say, these eye drops are very painful to use, and I had to use them very often. So I was there putting these eye drops in my eyes and really squeezing, you know, wincing every time I did it, but still, nevertheless, I had to do it because I wanted to get better. So I was putting these eye drops in. 2 weeks went, no change. So I went back to the hospital, and they said, okay, how long is it going to take? We can't tell you. We can't tell you how long it's going to take. We don't know. It might rectify. It might not. And at that point, when you can't see for 2 weeks, you know, it's quite sad. I mean, you close your eyes for 30 seconds. I always tell people when they think that, you know what, just close your eyes for 30 seconds and think, how will you survive this if you had to do it for longer? So anyway, we had to, at that point in time, I was sort of managing myself at home. Because I had a daughter in secondary school, a four-year-old child and a husband, and I couldn't see. So it was quite a challenging time. So my husband was running up and down. He'd go to work, he'd do this, he'd do that. And after 2 weeks, we realized that this isn't going to work. So I was so blessed that I had my church family members and my actual physical, my natural family members that rallied around. And every day, I had to have someone with me because I was a bit of a danger to myself because I couldn't see. Anyway, went into the doctor. The doctor said, okay, we don't know how long it's going to take. It might take a week. It might take 6 months. It might take this. Is there no other option? And they said, well, the only other option that we have for you is a transplant. So, you know, big sigh. Do I really want them to deal with my eye? You know, at that point in time, I was desperate. But then again, the transplant option wasn't an immediate option because obviously you had to wait. We had to wait for, as they said, the appliance, which was really somebody's eye. So we went home and we were just nursing this eye that was refusing to get better for weeks, turning into months. But I had to be strong. Was I disappointed, discouraged along the way? Oh, yes, many a times. There were times that I would cry because I was so upset. I couldn't go out. I couldn't do anything. You know, somebody said to me, oh, we'd like to send you some raw food stuff so that you can have food in the house. One of my friends just said, I don't think this woman is serious because we're seeing somebody can't see. You want to send her food to cook. How can she do that, you know?
Exactly.
You know, there were so many little things that, you know, we take for granted. So there I was, Lola. It was just like, you know what? I'm going to have to deal with this. So we were just there managing, patching. Every day someone would come in to help me to do this. I had two dresses at that time. The reason I had two dresses because it was like they were wash and wear. So I knew how to put them on. There were so many things I couldn't do. My son would help me into the bathroom. You know, my daughter would, I would just cobble along certain things. You know, I began to understand the way around my house, but that was it. Because I couldn't go out because it was like, what do I want to go and do? Where am I going? You know, so we managed. As I say, I bless God for the lovely people around me that looked after me every day. But each and every day was a day that I just felt, God, how long is this going to last for? But one thing I did, I had to do, and one thing God did with me earlier is that he brought me to a point where I knew that I was safe in him. I had my first encounter, as I said, on the train with him. And then after that, you know, I had a sister that used to come in and read the Bible to me because I couldn't read it, or I would listen to the Bible. And there was a scripture that came out, and it was in John. And it said, you know, this affliction, who sinned? And it says in the Bible, nobody sinned. It's not a familiar sin, but it's so that God can be glorified in the whole of this situation. Now, I didn't understand it. I didn't understand it, but I went with it. And one thing I will say to many people out there, people that are listening, do not engage or let negative things tell you who you are or what you're supposed to be or what you're supposed to be doing. Focus on positive things. Don't focus on negative things. Confess good with your mouth, because, you know, it's whatever you say you will have. You know, if you start going around saying, oh, I'm not going to survive this, I'm going to be sad, I'm going to this, I'm going to that, that is what you will have. So I knew that I had to have positive people around me. I didn't want a pity party. And I learned that early on, because I remember one or two people came in, and the first person that came in, and all I could, you know, that started crying, I didn't find it funny, because I was being drawn into that as well. Oh, I'm so sorry, I'm this and that. And I just felt, oh, yes, I'm sorry too. I wish it didn't happen. You know, so I had to, we had to detach from all that. So we were very careful, the people that came to see me. And I remember my husband would say, he said, B, this is not a circus. We're not in a circus. You're not a freak show. So we had to make sure that the people that were going to come around were people that would not look at me and look at my frailty and my inability to do things, or my, you know, my weakness, but people that they would see me and they would encourage me. So we went through all that. It's quite a journey, quite a journey. We went through all that, and then, you know, as I said earlier, we were thinking maybe rectify, maybe not, and it didn't. So we thought, along the line, we went for the option of surgery, because we felt, you know what, we can't live like this forever. And God was so faithful. He was so faithful. I remember sitting there thinking, God, how are we going to do this? You know, this is the only eye that I have that I can use. What if anything goes wrong? But he gave me peace. And the Bible says to me that the peace of God passes all understanding. So as I reiterate again, God gave me that peace to keep on and be sane and give me sanity and give me rest at that time. And as I say, was it difficult? Sometimes I would cry, don't get me wrong, especially when everyone was out and I was at home alone, you know, just, yeah. You know, it was over the weekends, because Monday to Friday, I always had someone. Saturdays were my worst days, but Sundays, I have a friend, God bless her, she would drive all the way from North London, about an hour to me every Sunday to look after me. And you just, that's how I had people every day. Then God, you know, used them to show me that, you know what, this isn't about you, B. It is about me, because I am the one taking care of you. Mm. So I knew that early on. And as I said, we confessed and had a lot of positive people around. So when it was time for me to have my surgery, it was quite an anxious time, in the sense that, you know, it was all going on. I had peace because I knew God was going to see me through. But then again, there's always that niggling doubt that, God, did you really say it? And one thing I know is that I always ask God, help me, help me, help me. So I remember the day I had my surgery, I went in and I was just, you know, when you're in a hospital, a big hospital, you see lights, this and everything, all the busyness of the hospital going on. So we went in and I saw my anesthetist. And he looked at me, I guess, because I could feel, I could perceive, you know, your other senses tend to get more sharp.
Yeah, the pickup, yeah. Yeah, the pickup.
So I could perceive him looking at me because he was talking in my face. So I could, you know, you can sort of visualize in your mind that this person is right in front of me, because I could feel his presence in front of me. And he said, oh, hello, my name is Mr. Lord, you know. L-O-R.
Wow.
And when he said that, do you know what? That was totally it. So any slight niggling fear or doubt or whatever, that totally, totally got rid of it. So then had the surgery and came out. Now, a couple of weeks to my surgery, God had told me, He said to me, B, I want you to start a foundation. Remember, I said, so that God will be glorified in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I want you to start a foundation, and I want you to call it Precious Sight Foundation. And I remember lying on my couch, and I'm thinking, God, I'm not an optician. I'm not an optometrist. I'm not a doctor. I have no medical qualifications, knowledge, insight whatsoever. I didn't even do biology at all levels. You know, I was not qualified in any way, shape, or form to even entertain what God was saying. But you know what? When God has your back,
yeah,
he will sort you out.
Mm.
So anyway,
yeah. No, go on, go on. I was going to ask, before we go into you setting up your foundation, I wanted to ask one very intriguing question. I won't tell you that I'm actually sitting down here and I'm actually blown away, because it takes not just, apart from the grace of God, it takes you as a person to have a very strong, you know, conviction that, you know, this is going to work out well. Because, hey, we're humans, and like you said something which we always all take for granted. The eye is very important. It kind of dampens everything, because it's like, I'm trying to imagine, it's like you're in perpetual darkness.
Mm. You see, God was kind. All I could see was cloud. So you know when you think that was the, you know, it wasn't that bad. It was bad. But you know when you're thinking dark, I thank God it wasn't
okay.
Dark. It was just cloud. So I couldn't see through the cloud, but I couldn't see. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah,
I was in darkness in the sense that I couldn't do anything. I couldn't see things. But I thank God that through it all,
it wasn't dark.
It wasn't black. It was white.
Okay, good.
Do you get what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't see anything, but I couldn't see black. So I'd open my eyes and I'd see white, but I wouldn't see anything but white.
Okay, and all throughout this one, you know, I asked you a question when we were chatting earlier. Did it ever cross your mind about we Africans, you know, the way we think?
Yeah.
You know, there is, I mean, did it ever cross your mind that in my village, you know, our village people, did it ever cross your mind about
them? You know something, Lola, it's really funny, because you know when you said it, I was thinking, really? It didn't. And I tell you why.
Okay.
It didn't.
Yeah.
Because right from the get-go, from my train journey, God had already spoken to me. So I had to rule it out. And the thing is, if I didn't rule it out there and then, and people would come, hey, did you speak to, did this and that, I would have been bogged down with what didn't concern me.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we get bogged down with what doesn't concern us.
And
the things we even blame the enemy for, the enemy has nothing to do with it.
Mm.
Half of the time, it's only because we're not focused on the right things. We're focused on the wrong things. And as I said, because I knew, and because I'm, you know, I am grateful. I believe that I'm strong enough Christian. I had to hold on to something, and God was like, "This was it for me. Do or die. Will I hold on to God? Will I go astray?" And I chose to hold on to God. And that's why throughout this conversation, God is paramount in it for me, because he is the one that saw me through. He is the one that allowed me to remain focused, to remain strong. He was the one that whenever I felt down or discouraged, I would hear a song. I would hear a verse. I would hear a ministration. And that's what kept me going. So my village people, they were totally out of the question. They didn't exist. And it was only when you said it, Lola, that I'm thinking, oh, you know what? That could have been a consideration, but I did not entertain the thought. Because all throughout this journey, what God had said was he was going to be glorified.
Yeah, yeah. And you see, I'm actually very happy you actually said you didn't even have the time to entertain the thought. Because one thing I can say is It's one thing to be down physically, okay? But most of the time, without us knowing as humans, one of the things that we systematically kill ourselves with is when we psychologically, when it happened to you, for example, you could have become defeated from day one.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Because I try to, when I talk to my guests, I try to put myself in their position. I try to look at your courage.
getting onto the train, it would have felt as if there was just so many things going around you, and your lifesaver at that point in time was just hanging on to your husband, you know, taking your steps. It would be like baby steps all over again.
You don't even want
to. It should have seen you don't know how to walk.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. And, you know, picking up on what you said, Bible says, whatever things are good, whatever things are pure, whatever things are just, and whatever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and any praise, think on these things. So I chose to think on the good things. I chose to think on what I would do when I came out, when I knew I was coming out. And that those are the kind of things. And it's mentally, you need to keep yourself aware and alert so that you don't get drawn back by the negative feelings, by the negative things around you. Because, you know, when you're in a place where you're on your own, you can't really do much. You have so much time on your brain, on your mind, to think, hang on, what if, you know, maybe I should do this, maybe I should do that. You know, I didn't tell my parents because I knew that it would be a big problem, because my mom and dad, they would have really, really like, you know how they get you. You're always a
parent. Yeah.
And my parents found out about my predicament, I think, a week or 2 weeks to my surgery. So it was, I had the, as I call it, my light affliction started in July. My parents didn't find out to the end of October. Because I just could not deal with them as well. Sending people, I have to come, I just could not deal with that. And when my dad found out, oh my gosh, the reason why I didn't tell him was because he would be calling me every day, every minute, every
hour. I can imagine that.
Going into such
Before we go on, I mean, just like to let people know that this is Real Talk with Lola. And wow, I I'm blown away. Yes, I am blown away with my guest, B. Adewumi, taking us through a journey with a near almost losing her eyesight. And well, the good thing about it is that at the end of the day, it makes move nearer God and make her realize that, okay, you know what, out of this bad situation can be something positive. And in the second part of our talk, she's going to take us through the journey of the positiveness that came out of this journey. And she will let us see how we can turn a bad situation into a good one. This is Real Talks with Lola on Spirit of Nigeria Radio and Life Radio 107.5 FM Ibadan. And my guest is still B. Adewumi. Thanks, B. And yes, the questions are going to start rolling in soon. I was hoping we'll go on a musical break, but I think the studio is okay. I think they are ready right now to go on a musical break. So let's go on a musical break, then we'll go on with our part two.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure, we've been enjoying B. Adewumi. I can tell you, I'm just seated here in the studios and I'm like stuck to my seat, you know. And I would love to hear the second part, you know, before we go today on Real Talk with Lola. But this music we're going to play for you is also something by someone who is physically challenged, eyesight wise, right? Kobam Sasuko.
Yeah.
And what's the title again? We plenty. There are many, many people going through their own truths in the world. Rise, okay, listen to this more backshot.
You go for auditions, but still, it be like saying no they pay. They don't laugh you tired. Some say, share until your mate get the aeroplane. Before you go make calm, you beg God to make calm, but see, everybody getting late. So my brother hustle, so my sister work. No condition lasts forever, your own turn become. So my brother hustle, so my sister work. Beans you know they cook forever, your own beans go down. If you see blessing, you make a more rejoice with them. If they ask you what's your own, take no offense. See this life better, better. Know your time they come, because no be only you kill Jesus. We plenty for there.
Indeed, Jesus died for many of us. All right, Kobam Sasuko there, visually impaired. Beautiful, beautiful piece of music. And I'm sure he does that every time. His COVID song is something that I listen to every day. Blows my mind. Lola and B, over to you.
Yeah, thanks. That was a lovely, that was one of my favorites too. B, are you still there?
I'm here. I'm right here.
Yes, okay. So now let's go. Like everybody said, your story is quite, your truth is quite spellbinding. I'm going to be quite honest with you. Was I expecting something like this? I'm going to be very honest. No. Because you see, it takes a story like this to let people understand that sometimes the power of the mind is very, very, very strong. And that is what you've proven to show to us that, look, even in all this, you didn't allow your mind to be gutted with any negativity. Even though you were scared, from what you've told us, you were scared, but you still allowed your positiveness to continue to push you. So one question that came in right now was, somebody asked, she says to me, she says, the first 2 weeks that you went home, which must have been the most daunting of the weeks, she says, how did you cope?
All right, Lola, I think before, Lola, sorry, ladies, sorry. I think before we just go ahead.
You know, I couldn't see, but I felt that I was going on. I tried to go on as normal. But I soon found out that I couldn't go on as normal. So, for instance, the first day I got back, I wanted to eat dinner. And I remember trying to use my fork to pick up food, and I couldn't because I didn't know what was on the plate, you know. So I had to sort of put my mouth to the plate and use, you know, my spoon or fork or hand to put the food in my mouth, you know. At first I thought that I could go on, you know, normal, but I realized that it wasn't going to happen. So soon after, my husband said, look, we can't be doing this. So every day, that's when we had to start. The first 2 weeks, maybe every other day somebody would come in just to keep me company and whatever, and I'd try, you know, to look after myself. But what I found, and what we found out, was that the second day that I didn't move all day except to find myself to the toilet because I was home alone. So we knew that it was not sustainable. We had to get help. And as I said, I was so blessed, my family members, my sister would come in the morning, my cousin, my church sisters, and I was just so blessed to have people start coming in. So the first 2 weeks, we didn't sort of make it formal. It was very sort of quite informal. But after the first 2 weeks, we knew that we had to beg people that, look, please just choose one day of the week to be coming in. That's how bad it was.
All right, Lola, can I butt in here, please, if you don't mind, ladies?
Yeah.
All right, I think we need to hear the...
Yeah, go on.
We need to hear the part B of the story. We heard the first part earlier before we went on break.
Yeah.
So, surgery, what happened? Yes. Yeah, I think, before the questions come in, so that we can hear, you know, what... How did it end up? And where are we now?
Yeah. So, go on, B.
Okay, what would you like me to say again?
We want to know... Was surgery
and okay. what happened after that. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. So as you said, I went into surgery. My incident happened in July. I went into surgery in November. Had the surgery, and it took me a few weeks to be able to begin to see. Now, it was really crazy because I lost every hour. It was, you know, I was in so much pain. But after I came out, you know, I had this huge burden. This huge burden. You know, God dealt with me a lot at that time. And he said, not only will I start the foundation, that I needed to write a book. And that book needed to come out by July, which for me was a big problem because I was just beginning to be able to see. And God told me to write a book. And for you to write a book, you know, you need one thing. You need your eyes.
Your eyes, yeah.
Somehow I did it. Don't ask me how, because I wouldn't be able to do it again, because God is not with me on it right now if I just decide on my own. You know, so after surgery, I began to see. After maybe about 4 weeks, I began to see a bit clearer and clearer until I went back to the hospital. I got glasses, you know, everything began to settle down. However, the total process of me being able to be quite comfortable was about a year and a half to be pretty comfortable. And still now, I'm in and out, but it's okay. I'm not in and out in big problems. I'm in and out adjusting to life.
Okay, that's first time after the surgery that you saw, that you could see. How did you feel?
Because it was quite gradual, I didn't quite notice this. And until one day, I looked at my husband, I noticed there was something a bit different about him.
Okay.
What's wrong with this man? He'd lost weight. He lost it fasting. It was just fasting a lot of the time. Like, you know what, this woman has to get better. I looked at my son. He had grown. He was 5. Oh, and, yeah, he was 5. Yeah, he was 5. He turned 5. So he'd grown from the little 4-year-old that I'd seen, because I didn't see him for the better part of 6 months. My daughter as well. By the time, you know, when I suddenly realized that I could see again, I just wept. I began to weep and weep and weep, and I was just so grateful. You know, I just see my children and I hug them, and everything. What's wrong with this woman again? But you know, you can't appreciate the light until you see the darkness.
Yeah.
So yeah, that it was very emotional for me, very very.
Very. Okay, and then you went on to start this charity organization that brought you to Africa.
Yeah.
Why Africa?
Before surgery, God had asked me to start the foundation, and okay. He told me clearly it was to Africa. You know, so when people say, "Will you come to Jamaica? Will you come to?" Mm-mm. Until God tells me otherwise, because God did not send me there. The place I know God sent me was Africa. And as I said, I wrote my book, and it's called Further Than I Could See, because God was taking me on a journey further than I could see. So I wrote my book, and I launched a charity in 2014. When we started, the first place I went, believe it or not, was South Africa, that I physically went. And it was quite an experience, but we're so grateful to God. So we started Precious Sight Foundation in 2014, and in 2015, we launched Precious Sight Charitable Foundation in Nigeria. So we have two registered charities, one in the UK and one in Nigeria, but we go across Africa. So currently we work every month, we work in Nigeria, we work in Gambia, and we work in Sierra Leone. We're starting in Guinea next month. We hope to go to Rwanda in the next few months once they're off the red list. We work in South Africa as well, and we hope to go back to Ghana. We've been to Ghana before, so we do cover Africa.
All right. So exactly, okay, what do you do? What exactly do you do with the foundation?
Exactly, yeah. I'm going to ask that question exactly. What do you do?
Because I lost my sight, and God, it was laid on my heart that, you know, there are so many people in Africa that cannot see, and all it takes is some sort of medication or care. So what we do, we tend to do eye screening. After we screen, we give out eye drops We give out reading glasses and we make prescription glasses. And then we often refer people that have more complex needs to hospitals in Nigeria. In the Gambia, we go and screen in rural areas. So we don't do it in Banjul most of the time. We do it up river where there are a lot of eye ailments. And we do cataracts. We do 20 cataract surgeries every month. We perform 20 cataract surgeries every month. And we screen about between 200 and 300 people every month. And we give them eye drops as well. Because where they live is a really, really bad area. So they have so many airborne eye diseases. In Syria alone, we do the same. We give out glasses and we give out, we do a lot of screening. We also pick up cases in Nigeria, individual cases that are
peculiar.
I'm quite passionate about children. So when children come and they've got this eye problem, you know, if I'm on mission with them, they can see that she's running there because she's feeling that this child needs some help. Let me, you know. So we screen people. We've screened over the last few years, screened nearly about 40,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah, we've given out over 30,000 eye drops. We've done about 1,000 surgeries. We've given out probably about 10,000 prescription glasses and another 20,000 reading glasses. So we do quite a lot. And we do it, almost every week we work somewhere.
So on these missions, for you, for example, what was diagnosed for you to have that? Because I think you said it was an eye drop. What did you call it?
It's a condition called hydrox. It was a condition called hydrox. And that, as I said, it's essentially a split cornea.
Okay. And so you try to educate people now about that.
They gave me a new cornea, basically.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's funny because I remember going to Nigeria once and I actually felt I don't even know how I felt. I felt pretty sad because I was at the airport and somebody said something, blah, blah, blah. And I was trying to explain that I needed to do something because I had a transplant. And they said, what was that? And I said, I had somebody's eye transplanted onto mine. And the person almost jumped out of their skin and almost didn't touch me. You know, and I just felt, really? But yes, those are the kind of things in Africa that we have to deal with. And it's very painful because there's so many people in Africa that could do with new corneas or new or artificial or people donating parts of their bodies or eyes or whatever. And it's seen as a stigma or is seen as something that we don't need to do. But I can say
But I think that has to do with again, like you rightly said, that has to do with where we're coming from.
Oh yeah.
We're African. Some things are not
we're getting there finally.
But we're just getting there.
Yeah,
it's very un-African. So Abi, I'm so happy we're having this discussion because you doing that and you turning your situation into something positive is very interesting because you could have decided to walk away and just start giving testimonies. But no, what you decided to do was, apart from giving testimonies and making sure that, God did it and everything, you still channeled it into something positive. But I'm going to ask a very important question. Apart from, your foundation doing the eyeglasses and this, in the rural areas, do you try to teach about preventions, about these eye diseases, things that can come up without taking care of your eyes or things that can just... you do that?
We do.
Yeah.
We give them eye drops because we find out...
Good.
We find out a lot of times basic hygiene also is a problem. And, when you go out and you see these women with their wrappers and you can see their eyes are dirty, their hands are dirty, and they're taking this same wrapper and using it to clean their eye, you see children... In the rural villages, they wake up, they don't wash their faces. And, we've been on mission where we're telling you, when you wake up in the morning, clean your face. It's that bad.
Huh.
When you, rural areas, Don't use dirty things to clean your eyes. Don't put dirty things in your eyes. The amount of times we've had to have, we've given people surgery because they've, you know, they've got silly things lodged in their eyes because they're not aware. So we give health aware, eye talks all the time. I mean, sometimes in Nigeria, you know, when they hear people are coming to give glasses, everybody believes they need glasses.
Okay.
So when we get there, mission, half of the time, we have a doctor to say, look, not all of you will get glasses, so we're going to look at your eyes and give you exactly what you need. Because you see all these mamas, I want glasses. I want glasses. And, you know, we have to explain, look, if we give you glasses you don't need, you're going to spoil your eyes. So just that, you know, so we have to do a lot of education, a lot of educating people that, you know what, wash your face, make sure your eyes are clean, don't put dirt in your eye, don't do this, you know, things that we find pretty basic, we find out that we have to be careful. You know, they'll take a dirty piece of cloth or tissue and it's like they don't even know that what they're doing is wrong. And what we also find as well, I mean, we had this young boy, 11-year-old boy, about 2 months ago in Sierra Leone, in a rural village. He had this massive tumor under his eyeball, massive. It was probably the size of a golf ball, and it was under his eyeball. And what were they doing? They were rubbing herbs and leaves on the thing, so it was getting progressively worse. Immediately we saw the boy, I said, take him into the hospital immediately. Let him have the tumor removed immediately. You know, that was it. And it's because it was getting worse because his mother, poor woman, didn't have the money to help him. So he was just using the herbs you could use to clean the eye. So we do a lot of education. There's not really much preventative we can do, but just tell them, take good care of yourself. Don't go and take dirty, muddy water to clean your face. Make sure it's clean. So.
Yeah, you know, talking about this, especially the Nigerian mindset in the rural areas, they some people believe, I know one or two people that believe putting on glasses is a sign of being educated. Mm-hmm. You understand? And they don't realize that they are actually spoiling their eyesight.
Sure.
You understand? And when you ask them, what is the strength of your glasses? They don't even know. They don't go to one of these roadside ones.
Yeah.
They cut some things. And because they just felt it was prestigious to have glasses on.
Oh, we've had all sorts, Lola. If I start telling
you. I can imagine.
From South Africa to Gambia to Sierra Leone to Nigeria to Ghana, you would just be like, you know, when we think about it. But all in all, we're just grateful that, you know, we're reaching people.
Yeah.
You know, when I started totaling the numbers of people we've seen, sometimes I'm crying. I'm like, Lord, thank you. You know, sometimes I'm like, God, the question is, if I were asked, would I go through it again? I would. I would, because I am so fulfilled. I'm so fulfilled in what I do. When I know that people can be helped, it just makes me warm inside. It just makes me know that, you know what? I'm here for a purpose. I'm here leaving a legacy. I'm here knowing that God can trust me to do something, to take care of his people. And I say, if everybody did their little bit, you know, Africa wouldn't be in the state that it is now.
It is right now.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. I feel you.
Lola, I thought I heard her say she wouldn't mind going through it again. Did I hear you right?
Sorry?
Did I hear you say you wouldn't mind going through it again?
Yeah. If God said I have to do it again, so that people will be benefiting from what I've been through. You know what? If he says me, you know what? I'd have to. You know, this is about total surrender. That God, okay. You know, I could suppose I said no and then I die. Of what use is that? So find somebody else. We'll find somebody to use, but for every single person we touch, I'm grateful for every pair of glasses. Every single
person. All right, I know we're trying to wind down, but let me just ask, you know, your husband was there for you. Is it part of this charity work, this foundation?
Sorry,
I know you said your husband was there for you. Is he part of this charity work or this foundation?
We founded the foundation together. He let me get on with it because I left work. I was a HR consultant, so I don't do that anymore. So we have to eat. So he supports me.
No, you know the truth. You are the one that God spoke to, not him. So
yes.
You are the messenger in this situation. Okay, how about your children now? Are they doing fine?
My children have followed me to mission trips. I mean, my son has been to Gambia, he's been to South Africa, he's been to Nigeria. He just started secondary school now, so he's a bit more grown. But I used to drag him with me. My daughter also, she's followed me to South Africa, Nigeria. You know, we go to some places and it's like, whatever. But now I think I don't go to as many of the outreaches as I used to. Because I've got good teams now.
Okay, you got a structure.
We're in Ibadan a few weeks ago, and we're going to Ibadan again next month. You know, people are like,
oh, really?
Yeah, people always pull me from left, right, and say, will you do this? Will you do that? And there's one thing I don't like to say, and that is no. So long as we can do it, sometimes I don't even have the money to do it. I just know that God will do it. And that's my reliance on God. But you know what? If people need it, we have to be there.
All right, you know what? You go to where you're coming to Yoruba, let us know. You share your story, but this time you speak Yoruba. Because now it's going smoothly and smoothly, you know, when you're delivering it in English. But I'm a bear, so you're banning. I'm a virgin, so tell me so.
I'm
a try. Ag me your junior, because I'm a try. all right. Okay.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, it's always a pleasure for me as a psychologist when people like you can step out and share their story with my listeners, because it's not just the story for me, it's what we're getting out of it at the end of the day. You understand? To let people know that, look, no matter the situation, we can always. There's always a way out. And in your own story, like I said to somebody, it was a tunnel. I mean, but at the end of the day, the light was there, and you did not just let the light shine, you distributed the light. Thank you so much, B. Thanks for coming on. And thanks, Aru, for having my guests again. Next week, we'll try and round up this particular episode of My Truth.
No, when she comes to Ibadan, man, I'm going to be with her, no problem. We'll give it some more wide coverage. We're going to be talking to a lot of people about it so that they can benefit from it. I think this has been a truly inspiring story. And for me, another positive reinforcement about the power of God. I mean, in this air-conditioned room, I've been sweating, I can tell you.
Yeah, I know.
That's why I was so shocked when she said she wouldn't mind going through it. You guys said,
because even for me, I was quiet at one point. That I knew the story, but I didn't know how deep it was until I heard it myself. I was like, whoa.
No, I mean, I was watching the clock. She was there 25 minutes or so, straight on, telling the story.
Yeah, it was deep. Yeah, thank you so much, B. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, B, thank you.
My prayer is that somebody has been blessed. My prayer is that, you know, it will encourage someone. And I hope that, you know, as I say, God will always be glorified in our situations. And we should choose to see the good and not the bad. The
bad, yes.
Allah said, as opposed to the darkness.
Wow. All right. Thank you very much. Spirit of Nigeria
thank
Radio.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
Bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. And that's Real Talk for Lola this week. Another interesting, beyond interesting, totally inspiring edition. And of course, we'll be repeating that on Spirit of Nigeria Radio in the course of the week for those who didn't join us today. All right. And of course, you can also go to our archive section on the website, and you can just click on B. Adewumi's poster, and of course you can hear this program. Thank you very much for being a part of the show. Coming up next is Doctor's Round on Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
You go carry me go the altar. Baby, I know go